Enough already. Okay, so we start with how. Okay. We'll start with homage to the Buddha.
You're perfectly in time.
Okay. How does it go? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. And today is, don't laugh, July 7th, 2015. And we are doing the Ger and Karuna Telaga book. And we are on lesson 11, right? Okay, so let me put you all on share screen in case I have to write things. Okay, so we are on page 148. And we did the first part of this sutta. This is the Alavaka Sutta, where the Buddha meets the demon Alavaka, and Alavaka wants to ask the Buddha some questions, and he's going to ask the questions in verse. So we start with about one third of the way down. Uttako Alavako Yako. Okay, you could repeat after me.
Uttako
Bhagavantang Gataya Ajabasi.
Bhagavantang Gataya Ajabasi.
Okay, so Attako was just then the demon Alavaka. Now we have the word Ajabasi. What grammatical form is this? Right, it's the aorist. And the reason why we have Ajja, did I explain this last time?
We did this sentence.
We did this, and I explained it.
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason we get Ajja is that we have Adi. Okay, then we have the verb Basi. It's a long A. Ajabasi. So basi indicates that it's the aorist. You can see it's the aorist ending. And it's based on the verb basati, which means to speak. Okay, now the aorist, often we have what they call the augment. That's the letter A is put in front of the aorist. So here we have Adi plus the A augment plus Basi. So when we have Adi plus A, it undergoes a kind of transformation that they don't get along so well together. So Adi turns into Adya. It first turns into Adya. The I turns into an A. And then in Pali, the Dya combination doesn't remain stable because it's a little difficult to speak Adya, Adyabasi. So to make it easier, that dia turns into Ajja. So we have Ajjabasi.
That's the same like in jhana.
Exactly, exactly. Like in Sanskrit, one would say, whoops. Dhyana. you know, for meditation, dhyana. But in Pali, the dhyā turns into ja, so it becomes jhana. Okay, so ajabhasi is usually used when speaking in verse. Maybe you could say that bhasati is like to speak, and adibhasati is like to recite. So then the demon alavaka, or addressed, we could say ajabhasati is like addressed. Then the demon alavaka addressed the Blessed One, the Buddha, in verse or by verse. These are actually very good, very nice verses. Okay, so let's recite them. King Sudavitang Puri Sasasetang. Yeah, I could do it. This is like the Indian metrical style. King Su Suchi Nang Sukam Avahati Su Have Sadu Tarang Rasanang Katang Jiving Jivitamma Who say tongue. Okay, so these are four questions that Alavaka is asking the Buddha. So King Suda Vitang Purisasa say tongue. So king is what? Okay, then this little word su here. It's the Pali form of Vedic. I call it a particle rather than a word. It's a Vedic particle, svid, which has an interrogative sense. It's used when asking questions. So it just reinforces the idea that this is a question. Then what is the duh here? We have su duh. Anybody know what the duh is?
Ida. Ida.
Right.
Here.
Yeah. It's the word ida, and then what happens, this is an example of sandhi. We have the particle su plus ida. And so what happens when they join is that the I is weaker than the U. So the I drops out, and the U turns into the long U.
When will you be teaching Pali? When do your classes start?
I started it. I research it.
Okay, so the su plus ida, what happens? The I drops out and the U gets extended because it has to fit the meter of the verse. Okay, the word vitang means wealth or treasure. Here they give property or wealth. And purisasa means of a person. And setang is the adjective meaning best. Now, if it were prose, the verse would say, King Suda Purisasa Setang Vitang. That would be the normal word order. But this is verse, so it has to fit the meter, and so the word order is changed. So we have what here, literally taking word for word, what here treasure of a person best. But in ordinary English, we would say, what here is the best treasure of a person? Then we have King Su Suchinung Sukum Avahati. So we have what goes with Suchinung. Suchinung is based on the past participle for the verb charity.
Charity?
Yeah, I just typed it, charity. Let me bring my characters to the top. Okay, now there are two ways of forming the past participle from charity. One is, the more common one is charita. And so we get very often, we see very often, sucharita, that is what is well done or good behavior, and ducharita, that's what is badly done or misbehavior. But there's another past participle from charity, and that is china. So what has been done? What has been practiced? And then here we have the prefix su, meaning good or well. So what well practiced, then sukham means, of course, happiness, and avahati means brings or leads to. And normally the verb would be avahati with short. Except for the first A, the other two A's would be short. But here, to fit the meter, the last A becomes long. So you could hear that King Su Suchinung Sukum Avahati. You see, it sounds a little flat. But King Su Suchinung Sukum Avahati. See, that's the right meter. Doesn't that sound to be the case?
Yes.
You're a musician, so you have that ear. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what well practiced brings happiness? Okay, then the third question. King Su Have Sadhutarang Rasanang. Okay, so what? Then this word have doesn't really have any meaning. It's a little bit like, I know, in English poetry, indeed or truly. So what truly sadhutarang is. This is what is called the comparative. The word sadhu means delicious, and tara means more delicious. That is the comparative. But I think it should really, it really has what a superlative meaning here, even though the relative or comparative form is used. But it really means what is the best or the most delicious. Then rasa means flavor or taste. So what indeed, what truly is the most delicious of tastes?
So when we say sadhu, sadhu, we're saying
delicious. No, no, that's a different word.
Oh, right.
Yeah, this is sadhu. That is sadhu.
Oh, right.
You see, that's the that's D-H.
Right, right. Okay, sorry. But it seems to have almost a similar meaning. Like,
no.
It's great.
No. Because sadhu is the word sadhu that we have here with the short A is used only either in relation to flavors or tastes.
I see.
And I mean, metaphorically, it's extended.
But how about, isn't sadhu also like a holy person in India?
Yeah, yeah, because it comes from the idea that the word sadhu, originally meaning good, so the good person is one who is leading the life of renunciation. So then the sannyasis, you know, the ascetics and monks, they come to be called sadhu. Even in Sri Lanka, they use it for the monks. They say, sadhu adinoa, the monk is... Oh, our Siu isn't online. Usually he
gets... I think he's traveling.
Oh, oh.
It's okay.
Oh, Siu. Okay, so what indeed is the most delicious of tastes? Then the last question, katang jiving jivitamahu setang. So katang is how, and this forms a compound, it's complicated, an interrogative compound with jiving, which means living. So, how living, then jivitang is life. And ahu, this is the third person plural form, third person plural of a verb meaning to say or to call. So, they call or they say that life. Then seitang is best. So to put it into English, it's a little bit complicated to get it literally. You see, kata jiving, what case is this grammatically?
Accusative?
Right, it's the accusative. It's the object of the verb ahu, they call or they say. And jivitang is also accusative. And the word seitang describes jivitang. So, trying to put it literally, they call one how living the best life. But to make good sense in English, I would have to say, how did I translate this? How does one live for them to say one has the best life? Or more simply, what kind of life is the best life? That is the meaning. How living do they call that the best life? Okay, we'll just leave it at that. Okay, now we come to the answer. Any questions so far on the question? Any questions about the questions?
Bhante?
Yeah.
You say vasana is of taste. Yeah, shouldn't that be genitive?
Yeah, this is genitive plural. I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that. It's genitive plural because it's the most delicious of tastes. You see, the singular is rasa, but the genitive plural is rasanang, of tastes.
I see. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so let's take the answer part now. Again, we do it in the kavya style. Sadhi devi tang puri sa sa se tang.
Sadhi devi tang puri sa sa se tang.
Dhammo sucino sukama vahati.
Dhammo sucino sukama vahati.
Avahati.
Avahati.
Yeah, I don't want to hear avahati. Not correct. Okay. Satchang have sadutarang rasanang.
Satchang have sadutarang rasanang.
Panya jivi. Panya jiving jivitam mahusetang.
Panya jiving jivitam mahusetang.
Okay, so this is the Buddha's answers to the questions. So he says, sadida vitang purisasa setang. So what is sadida?
Sada plus ida.
Right. It's sada, which is faith, plus ida, meaning here. And so when the sada and the when the a of sada and the I of ida join, then the a drops out and the I becomes long. Okay, so faith here is the best treasure of a person. Then Dhammo Suchino Sukum Avahati. So the Dharma, well practiced, leads to happiness. Okay, then the third line, satchang have sadhu tarang rasanang. So truth indeed is the most delicious of tastes.
Where does deed come in?
Indeed.
Is that have?
Oh, yeah.
The have is just the kind of exclamation,
okay.
Really, indeed. It's really just for the purpose of filling the meter. Then panya jiving jivitamahu setang. So they, let's see if I can put this well. They say that one living, well, they say that one living by wisdom has the best life. They call living by wisdom the best life. Ah, that's a good way to put it. So for the question, how living do they call that the best life. And this one, living by, they call living by wisdom the best life. Is there, are there any questions, or is this, how does this seem?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Here the Dhammo means the Buddha's teaching, right? The doctrines?
Yeah, it's pretty broad, the word Dhamma. Mm-hmm. So I think the commentary explains it by the 10 types of wholesome deeds, mm-hmm. you know, the 10 good types of karma. But it's, you know, it could be taken in a very broad sense. And probably since the demon Alavaka at this point wasn't acquainted with the Buddha's teaching, so I think the Buddha didn't here mean Dhamma in the narrowest sense of his own teaching, but the word Dhamma would have been understood, you know, by everybody in India at the time, or in northern India, to mean a righteous way of life, a virtuous way of life.
A demon is asking the Buddha how to live a good life?
Yeah. Because eventually this demon, this isn't a demon like Mara, who tries to get people. This is just a demon in the sense of a being, that supernatural being that attacks others and kills them and eats their flesh. But they have the capacity, they say, for enlightenment. And this yakka, this demon, after listening to the Buddha's teaching, I think at the end he becomes a stream enterer and gives up his bad practices. Okay, if there's any questions from the internet? Okay, so let's move on then. We have some more verses here. Okay, so these verses are in a meter which is called Trishtup, which means it has 11 syllables, which have to be following a particular sequence of strong and weak syllables. These verses are in what is called the shloka meter. This is 8 syllables. So, listen. Na antarike. Wait. No, this is also shloka. I'm sorry, this is also Trishtub. Na antalikena samudamajje. Yeah, you could recite. What?
It sounds like the same meter.
Yeah, it's the Trishtub meter also. Yeah. Na antalikena samudamajje.
Na antalikena samudamajje.
Na pabatanang vivarang pavisa.
Na
vijati so jagati padeso.
Na vijati so jagati padeso.
Yata tito muncheya papakamma.
Yata tito.
Okay, so grammatically, this verse is fairly easy. Okay, so antalika means in the sky, and this is in the locative case. So not in the sky, then na samudra majje. So this means not in the middle of the ocean. Samudra is ocean, Majja is middle. Not in the middle of the ocean. Okay, then, na pabatanang vivarang pavisa. Okay, vivarang means an opening. And pabata is mountain. So this is not the opening of mountains. And then pavisa. Does anybody know what grammatical form that is? Pavisa. It's a little tricky. Right, very good. Okay, the reason why pavisa is a gerund, if you remember, there are two ways to form the gerund. We could have the gerund from pavisati form this way. One way would be pavisit va, having entered. But another way would be starting by adding ya, pavisya. So that would give pavisya. But often what happens when the y gets connected to another consonant is that the combination leads to a duplication of the consonant. So in this case, pavisya becomes pavisa. Another form that could emerge from this would have been pavisya. By putting an I there, it breaks up that combination. Okay, so pavisa means having entered. So this is not having entered an opening of mountains. That is like a cave among the mountains. So this is somebody who's trying to escape the results of his bad karma by maybe going up into the sky, by going to the middle of the ocean, maybe a little island in the middle of the ocean, like the Cayman Islands.
Offshore account.
You can't escape your karma on the Cayman Islands.
Okay. Navijati means there does not exist. So here we have Jagati is a locative, meaning in the world, plus Padesa means a place, a region. Okay, thank you. And so, a place in the world, and then the P is doubled here. This is because of the meter. Then, yata tito means, yata means where, and tito means standing, or we could say dwelling. Then muncheya is the verb. What kind of verb is this? I heard it coming. Right. No, not the future. Yongxin has it correct. It's the optative. One might be free. Papa kama means an evil deed, a bad deed. So putting it all together, not in the sky, not in the middle of the ocean, not having entered an opening of mountains, we could say a mountain cave, not having entered a mountain cave, does there exist that place in the world dwelling where dwelling one might be free from bad karma?
Muncheya is to be free?
Yeah. Munchit, well, the regular verb would be munchiti, to be free, or mut. Well, usually it would come in the passive form, muchiti, to be free. But this is the optative, so it comes out muncheya. Well, I think on some readings it come mucheya. Okay, so the basic point here is that there's no, if you do a bad karma, you know, you can't go to another continent or hide in the mountain, even in a mountain cave, and be free from that karma. Any questions on this grammatically?
Bhante?
Yeah.
So I guess it's implied, you say one might be free, so I guess one here is kind of implied here?
Yeah, when the verb occurs, it doesn't always have to have an explicit subject. If the verb just stands alone, well, actually, here we have the subject, yata tito, one standing, one dwelling in any of these places. So that is the subject.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so now we come to the next verse. Na antali ke na samudamaje.
Na antali ke na samudamaje.
Na pa patanang viva rang pavisa.
Na pa patanang viva rang pavisa.
Na vijati so jagati padeso. Yata titang na pasa heta machu.
Yata titang na pasa.
Okay, so the first three lines of this verse are the same. So the only thing that's different is the fourth line. So do we notice any difference right away in this fourth line? First difference that should be immediately clear.
Yata titang.
So what does that mean?
It's not a subject, right? It's accusative, an object.
Right, exactly. So it's the accusative case, and it's indicating the object. And so the subject here is machu. Machu means death.
Death.
Not debt, D-E-P-T. Though that also will apply. But it's death, the same as marana. And then the verb pasahati means to conquer. They give to subdue, oppresses or subdues, or conquers, to conquer. And then this is the, so the regular verb is pasahati. And do anybody know what grammatical form we have here?
Future participle participle.
No, no.
Is it causative?
No.
Optative?
It's an optative, but it's a special kind of optative. If you studied the lesson, lesson 11, you might be able to identify it. Okay, I'll tell you. This is the middle voice or reflexive form of the optative. And you find this in the table on page 155 at the top. It's the third person singular. And as I told you the last class, you don't have to worry too much about these forms because they're relatively rare and you find them mostly in verse. And the form that occurs, of all of them, that occurs most regularly would be the optative eta. And from the indicative, the present, middle form would be third person singular. Actually, one gets the present, the other forms one does meet also. But they're pretty rare, so you should just, when you get puzzled by a verb in a verse and you can't figure it out, then look at the table of the middle voice verbs and you might find it there. But don't become too worried and anxious about these forms.
Bhante, it seems like the vowels were elongated or more pronounced in this. Is it because it's in verse as opposed to regular reading?
What do you mean?
Like when it's being chanted or sung, it seems like there was more emphasis, like na anta. Instead of anta, like the short A instead of a long A.
No, I'm chanting always with wherever there's a short A, I'm chanting a short A. But and then the E by itself is a long vowel.
Okay.
Except when it occurs before a double consonant, then it comes short.
Okay.
So I'm just chanting according to the actual sound value. Okay, so now we have the verb pasa heta, which means might, since it's the optative, might conquer or can conquer. And then it's the negative, cannot conquer. And so it's saying that not in the sky, not in the middle of the ocean, not having entered a cave in the mountains, does there exist that place in the world where death would not conquer one dwelling there?
But I have a question.
Yeah.
So here, Pasaheya,
yeah,
is the optative, the middle voice.
Yeah, it's the middle voice optative, third person singular.
Here, the 155 page,
yeah.
I can't find the Aya.
Here, on the top of the page.
Here?
The red one.
Not Aya, Eta. This is Eta, not
Let me
Aya.
See.
Aya. In text, yeah.
No, that's it. Eta.
Yeah, here text, yeah. Pasa, not Pasa Eta. Pasa Aya. Here.
Where?
Pasa Aya. In the text.
Oh, you got this from the Sixth Council edition. Is that so? You copy this off?
Yeah. The Suki gave me the file.
Maybe no, that's maybe the addition with the translation. Different. The PDF of your translation.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, now I see. Okay, there might be like different editions. I think that's the case. I think that the person who put this together got this from the Sixth Council edition. You see, which was the Burmese version, where I think this book is taking it from the Sinhalese script edition. So sometimes there are little differences in reading. So Nupase Saheya, that is the regular optative singular. Whereas the Pasa Heta, that's the middle voice. But I think, my opinion, that the Sinhalese script version is more reliable. That what happens with the Burmese script is when they, or the Burmese edition, sometimes when they come across unusual readings, they turned it into the more normal form, rather than preserve the more, the rarer, more archaic form.
The file and the text are different. I see. I'm sorry.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. So there.
Bhante?
Yeah.
In general, when does one use the middle voice verb instead of like the indicative verb?
Normally, you know, in prose, almost always it's the regular, what they call the active voice of the verb. But in verse, and occasionally in more elevated passages in prose, they'll use the middle voice. It's a little bit like when you look at poetry, like 19th century poetry, they'll use rarer forms of a word rather than the more common form.
Thank you, Bhante.
So does, with that version, does the meter still work?
Yata titang na pasa heya machu. Yeah, it doesn't affect the meter. Okay, shall we go on to the next? Okay. This is the shloka form of verse, a different meter. This is the most common meter used in many, many Indian works, like I think the Mahabharata, the great Indian classic, is all in the shloka meter. Bhagavad Gita, I think, is all shloka. So, sukha kama... I'm chanting this tree stoop. Sukha kamani bhutani. Yo dandena vihingsati. Atta no sukha me sano.
Atta no sukha me sano.
Pecha so na labate sukhang.
Pecha so na labate sukhang.
Okay, so in this kind of meter, each line has 8 syllables, but occasionally, in order to get the whole meaning in, there'll be 9 syllables, and in that case, one has to recite 2 syllables very quickly in succession to fit the meter. So I think, pecha so na la ba te su kang. Here we have 9, so we have to say, run together the so and the na, I think. Pecha, no, let me see which. Pecha so na. What's the lubba? The lubba gets run together. Pecha so na lubba te sukang. Does that sound right, our music master?
I think the ba and lubba and the, yeah, it's almost part of the la.
Yeah. Okay, so sukha kamani bhutani. Here the word bhutani means living beings. This is jongshan. And these, the living beings are described as sukha kamani. This is a bahu-bihi compound. Because the word kama means desire. Sukha means happiness or pleasure. And kama means desire. And sukha kamani is used as an adjective to describe bhutani, beings. So we have beings desiring, beings who desire happiness. And if we just look at the first line, we can't tell whether it's an object or a subject, whether it's nominative or accusative. Because bhutani can be either the subject or the object. But when we look at the second line, what does that tell us about sukhani kamani? Object or subject?
Object.
Right. Why object?
Because eternal is object.
Wait, no, I'm asking Venerable Mingjie, please. No, bhutani is beings. So what does the second line tell us about the subject? Not exactly. Look again, the second line.
The second line is Yodadenana
Himsati. Yeah, but what, how, from the second line, how do we know that sukha kamani bhutani is the object, not the subject? Look closely. The reason is there. No, not done. Okay, anybody on the internet? Kim?
Yeah, because Akano, Sukamesano is subject.
The second line. I said the indication is in the second line. I'm getting this noise that's coming through. Say again.
Is it because the Himsati is for singular one?
So far, nobody has really hit the nail on the head yet. Bowe, you want to tell everybody?
Because Yo is the subject.
Because what?
Yo.
Right, okay. Yeah, you can see that the subject is yo. That means one who. And that is the subject. It goes with the verb vihingsati. Vihingsati means harms. Please mute the microphone now, people on the internet. Okay. So yo goes with the hingsati, one who harms. And danda, the word danda, means, literally it means a stick. But it takes on the meaning of violence, because one uses the stick to beat others. And then this is the instrumental case, so with violence. So one who harms with violence living beings who desire happiness. So you see, because yo is the subject, then bhutani has to be the object. So one who harms by violence beings who desire happiness, then we have atano sukham. We have to break up sukham and asano. Asano means seeking or searching for, one searching for. So here we have atano sukham asano, one seeking atano, his own sukham, happiness. Then pecha, pecha we've had before. What grammatical form is it? Not past participle. I think we've had this before. Okay, pecha is a gerund. It comes from a verb. It's based on a verb that I don't think ever occurs. In the regular indicative form, but the verb would be peiti, which means to pass away, to pass on. And we get this verb, it appears in the form of the past participle, peita, which means one who has passed away, one who has passed on, which then takes on the meaning of the ugly, the hungry ghosts. And then we have petya, the gerund, which becomes petya, having passed away. So here, petya, having passed away, so he, na, does not labhate, gain, or find, sukham, happiness. And the verb labhate here, this is also the middle voice. This is the regular present middle voice form, third person singular. You can see it on page 154 on the top chart where we have the present middle forms. So you see the third person singular, the TE. And this one finds fairly often in verse. Of course, it, I guess for the Indian of that period, it gave it like an elevated flavor, like who's a famous 19th century poet?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, let's try Tennyson. Some poems. Okay, like
waken thou with me.
Yeah, like waken thou with me. Now droops the milk-white peacock like a ghost. and like a ghost she glimmers on to me. Well, very beautiful. Now lies the earth all Dane to the stars. You see, even the word order is changed in order to fit the meter. And all thy heart lies open unto me. Now slides the silent meteor on and leaves the shining furrow as thy thoughts in me. Where's the poem? Anyway, you know what I mean, that the, just like English verse uses archaic forms, so Pali also sometimes uses the archaic forms. Okay, let us go on. Okay, so taking the whole verse, one who harms by violence living beings who desire happiness, seeking his own happiness, having passed away, he does not obtain happiness. Okay, then the next verse, they're matching verses. Sukha kamani bhutani. Yodandena nahingsati. Atano sukame sano.
Atano sukame sano.
Pecha solabate sukang.
Pecha solabate sukang.
Okay, so here we have actually. Well, the line's almost the same, but here we have, in line two, we just have the negation. So one who does not injure by violence beings who desire happiness, desiring his own happiness, having passed away, he gains happiness. So this should be quite clear. Vihingsati, hingsati, they're pretty much the same meaning. Somebody have a question?
The V is just really for a meter, a syllable?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes V will affect the meaning of a word. Like this raga is passion, and viraga is dispassion. Yeah. But sometimes the V just intensifies a little bit, or it doesn't really make much difference. Like sudhi, visudhi, both mean purity, purification. Yeah, sometimes the V has a negating effect, sometimes just the slightly intensifying effect. Okay, we'll do the next verse. Parijinam midang rupang. Roga nidang pabangunang. Bijati puti sandeho.
Bijati puti sandeho.
Maranantang hi ji vitang. Okay, so taking the first line, we have the two words are run together for the sake of the meter, but we break up parijinang and idang. Idang goes with rupang, which means this form, that is, this body. And parijinang means worn out, old, decayed. So this body is worn out or decayed, old and decayed. Roga nidang. The word nida means, originally it means a nest, like a bird's nest. But here it's used with roga. Roga means illness. So roga nidang means a nest of illness, like full of illness. Pabangunang. Let's put Tennyson away. Yeah, there's a verb bunjati, which means to break apart. And then this has a prefix. So bunga is based on the verb bunjati. And here it has banguna, which gives it the sense of that which breaks apart. So it's describing the body as it's a nest of disease and something which breaks apart. Maybe we could use the English word fragile or brittle. Like we would say this cup is pabangunang, because, well, actually it's pretty strong, pretty tough. But if I had a delicate, like a champagne glass, you know, thin glass, then I say it's pabangunang, because if I drop it, it will break easily. This thing I could drop, it won't break. You want to see? So this body is decayed, a nest of illness, brittle. Bijati puti sandeho. Okay, sandeha is another word for the body. And puti is putrid, disgusting. This is a little bit like the negative flavor of early Buddhism. Bijati is breaks up. So this putrid body breaks up. Maranantang hi jivitang. Here we have jivitang is the subject, life, and then jivitang is described by, this is a bahubihi compound. We have marana, which means death. plus anta, which means end. And so he put them together to get marana anta, which means ending in death. And this marananta functions as an adjective used to describe jivita, life. So life ends in death. So putting it all together. So this form, this bodily form, it has decayed, it's old, it's a nest of illness, it's fragile. This disgusting body breaks up, for life ends in death. Okay, any questions on this? It's strong.
It's pretty dark.
Which verse is this from the Dhammapada?
I don't know the number offhand. If some, I think maybe you have it on that sheet.
Yeah. Yeah.
11.
Yeah.
11?
No, it can't be so early.
148.
You know, some of these websites have like...
motivational.
No, like they have the daily word of the Buddha. Usually it's something upbeat, like you can overcome all your problems. Sometimes, I mean, often they're not even real word of the Buddha, but like when you see a beautiful sight, flash a happy smile, the Buddha. Hey, the Buddha never said that. But you find it on these websites. Always look on the bright side of life, the Buddha. Okay, so we go on then to the next. It looks like a long passage, but it's really only one paragraph, and then the other four just repeat the same thing. So we start with the first paragraph. Attako Bhagava.
Attako Bhagava.
Panchavagiye Bhikkhu.
Panchavagiye Bhikkhu.
Amantesi.
Amantesi.
Okay, now the Panchavagya Bhikkhu means the monks who belong to the group of five. And this refers to the monks who were became the Buddha's first five disciples. So they're called the Panchavagya Bhikkhu. Vaga means a group, pancha is five, then vagya, that turns vaga into an adjective. So we would have to say in English, who belong to, the monks who belong to the group of five. And so what case, panchavagya bhikkhu?
Accusative.
Yeah, it's the accusative, because the Buddha is addressing them. So he says, the first statement, Rupang Bhikkhave Anatta.
Rupang Bhikkhave Anatta.
So the Buddha says, form, O monks, is non-self. No, you don't have to repeat after me. Okay. Anatta isn't functioning as an adjective, It just retains its own original form as a nominative. Okay, now we come, this is like the argument for non-self, kind of logical argument. Rupang cha hidang bhikkhave. Atta abhavisa.
Atta abhavisa.
Nayi dang rupang.
Nayi dang rupang.
Abhadaya sangvateya.
Abhadaya sangvateya.
Labeta cha rupe.
Labeta cha rupe.
Evang me rupang hotu.
Evang me rupang hotu.
Evang me rupang ma ahositi.
Evang me rupang ma ahositi.
Yasma cha ko bhikkhave.
Yasma cha ko bhikkhave.
Rupang anatta.
Rupang anatta.
Tasma.
Tasma.
Rupang abhadaya.
Rupang abhadaya.
Sangvatati.
Sangvatati.
Nacha labhati rupe.
Nacha labhati rupe.
Evang me rupang hotu.
Evang me rupang hotu.
Evang me rupang ma ahositi.
Evang me rupang ma ahositi.
Okay, so the Buddha first says, form, O monks, is non-self. Okay, that's sort of declaring the theme. Now comes the argument. So, and here the sentence is going to use what is called the hypothetical conditional. That's a very rare form, but we found it in the grammar section in this chapter. That is on page 152 and 153. And here we'll find the relevant form at the top of 153, the third person singular, abhavisa. But before I continue, I have to end hypotheses, and I'll be back in a moment. I didn't want to call a break because we lost about 25 minutes at the beginning of the class.
If anybody has to go, they can go.
I started also.
Great.
Okay, so this is now the hypothetical conditional. Oh, I see. Hung Lee went out. For okay, so the hypothetical conditional, this means setting up a condition if such and such is the case, then this would follow in a situation where this is not the case. For example, if I would say, if I went to the moon, I would build a red house there. You see, if I do something, then something else would happen. But it's impossible because I can't go to the moon. Let's say,
so it's mostly like a hypothetical, or are these analogies that the Buddha is using?
I wouldn't say analogy. Analogy is comparing something to something else. It's a hypothesis that is not fulfillable, that won't be fulfilled. Maybe we could say, if the Empire State Building were to collapse, this afternoon, many people would be killed. But the Empire State Building, according to in all probability, is not going to collapse this afternoon. Of course, somebody could have been sitting in a Pali class on the morning at 8 a.m. in the morning of, well, it's not a joking matter, of September 11th, 2001, saying if the Twin Towers were to collapse.
Passwords have been deleted.
Excuse me?
I said, this is why your passwords are being
Okay, so if, so he's saying, if this form, Idang goes with Rupang, if this form were the self, so that is the hypothesis. Then comes the consequence. Nai idang rupang abadaya sangvateya. Nai idang here is just na plus idang, and then the y is put in. I know it's a little bit fancy in order to make it flow more smoothly. Nai dung. But it just means not this form. Abada means affliction or oppression or almost the same as suffering. And sangvateya, or sangvatati, means to lead to. And sangvateya is the optative case. So, if this body, or if this form, were the self, this form would not lead to affliction. So that's one consequence. Then the second consequence, labeta che rupe evang me rupang hotu evang me rupang ma ahositi. So this labeta is a little bit weird. Okay, we have, I explained it last time, but I'll explain it again. We have the verb labati, which means to obtain, to gain. Then this is the passive form. Originally, it's labyati, which, because of the combination with y, it gets turned into labati. Okay, but this here, we have labeta. This is the first person singular middle voice, or let's say it's the middle voice optative, middle voice optative, first person, third person singular. You see the form on page, again on page 155 at the top. Okay, now when the verb labati becomes passive, it takes on the sense of, to explain this, to be obtained or to be possible. Yeah, that's a good way, to be possible. So it would be possible this is really a difficult passage for, I have to say, for people who are just learning Pali. The style of expression, it's very, I mean, it's simple, but it's very old, archaic. Let me first explain it more freely, then we'll go back to the original, to the actual wording. It would be possible to exercise control over form so that one could think Evang me rupang hotu, let my form be thus. In other words, if I'm old, I could think, let my form be young, and I would become young, the body would become young. If I'm ill, I think, let my form be thus, and then I'm free from illness and I'm in good health. If I've been injured, then I don't have to go to a doctor, but I think, let my form be thus, and I'm free from injury. So if the body were self, then I would be able to exercise this perfect control over it. So let my form be thus, and it would be thus. And then evang me rupang ma ahosi. I would also be able to exercise control, let my form not be thus. And notice the verb here, what kind of verb is this?
Aorist.
It's the aorist verb, but as I explained last time, when we have the prohibitive particle, the negative command, ma, the aorist verb is used, but it doesn't have the sense of the past tense, but it has the sense of a negative command. Like if I say, ma evang akasi, do not do that. Do not act in such a way. So I'm using the aorist akasi, but it doesn't mean have a past meaning, but it means don't do that. And so here we have the aorist of hoti. So let my form not be thus. So when I'm ill, I think, may I not be ill? And if the form, the body were self, immediately I would be free from illness. When I'm getting old, let my form not be old, and the old age disappears. If I'm getting drowsy, I think, let me not be drowsy, and my form is free from drowsiness. So the idea here is that if the body were self, we would be able to exercise control over it in such a way that if we want it to be a particular way, we just have to give the mental command and the body will be that way. And if we don't want the body to be in a particular way, we just have to give the mental command and the body will not be in the undesirable way. And so the idea here is that we have, it would be possible, labeta, in regard to form. And then what's implied, it would be possible in regard to form, then we would have to put in brackets or in parentheses, it would be possible in regard to form to exercise control over it in such a way as this. And then evang me rupang hotu, evang me rupang ma ahosi. Did you have a translation in there?
Yes.
Let's just see, because I think this is my own translation. Okay. So this is the way it's translated here. if monks formless self, this form would not lead to affliction, and it would be possible to have it of form. Which...
Habit of form?
That sounds a little odd.
It would be possible? It would be possible...
To have it of form?
It would be possible to have form?
No, to have it of form. That's a little odd expression. Okay, I would still say we have to put in, to make it meaningful, to put in certain words in brackets. It would be possible in regard to form to gain control over it in such a way that we can determine, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. And I think this is, can you understand what I'm saying? It's quite difficult, to the idiom. How about Yongxin?
I understand.
You understand? You get the point. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now that is sort of the negative argument, because form is really not the self, but he's saying, suppose form were the self, then that would be, this would happen. But now he's saying, yasma chiko bhikave rupang anatta. So yasma is because, O monks, rupang anatta, form is not the self. Tasma rupang abhadaya sangvatati. Therefore, form leads to affliction. Therefore, the body grows old, it gets sick, it gets injured, and it dies. Nucha labhati rupe, and we do not, it's not possible to get control over form such that we can determine evang me rupang hotu, let my form be thus, evang me rupang ma ahosi, let my form not be thus. Okay, so this is basically, it's the same kind of argument, except here it's starting from the premise, which is taken to be the actual truth, that form is not self. So because form is not self, therefore form leads to affliction, to old age, illness, injury, and death, and therefore we do not have such control over form that we can make it become this way and not become that way. Okay, then the same thing is said with regard to feeling, perception, volitional activities, and consciousness. So the remaining four paragraphs are really all the same structure. Okay, any questions?
Bonte?
Yeah.
So abhavisa, if this form were the self, so abhavisa kind of basically sets up the conditional?
Yeah, this is the, it's the hypothetical conditional. That is a conditional based on a hypothesis which is not actually real. So the other sentence, the conditional. But it's a hypothetical conditional. There are conditionals which are based on reality. But this is based on what is contrary to fact. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so now we'll stop for today. And today is Tuesday. Well, next week we'll have the class on Monday. That will be July 13th. And next week we'll take the further readings. We'll start the further readings. probably that will take two sessions.